Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
All right. Welcome back to the show. And, you know, as always, I'm fired up. It's going to be a little bit different this week because we're actually recording on a Tuesday. And so tomorrow's Independence Day. I know you guys are going to be listening to this on Saturday, so I'm going to try to make it as prescient as possible. Hopefully nothing crazy happens Thursday or Friday that nullifies what it is that we're talking about. That typically doesn't happen in holiday weekend or weeks. But the reason that we're not going to be here Thursday and Friday is very, very important. I've got some very important matters to attend to. You know, things that are of a very high level in finance and radio and this job in media. And I'm really not that self-important. But it's the big golf tournament that we've got. It's the Cup, as we call it. And you guys all know I played football at Pacific Lutheran University. And best friends in my life I made there. And we all get together on the 4th of July, so I'm going to see all those guys tomorrow. And then on top of that, the weekend after the 4th of July, we do a three-day golf tournament in Eastern Washington that's structured like the Ryder Cup. And it's one of my favorite events of the year, one of my favorite things to do. So we're going over there doing that. Hopefully this year I'll bring back some hardware. I got robbed last year. It was a handicap scandal. We had some, and Darren, the producer, very accomplished golfer. He wouldn't say so himself, but it's like a 4 handicap, which makes me angry. But yeah, I got robbed, Darren, last year. Sandbaggers? Big time sandbaggers. Yep. And you know, it's the ones close to you, right? Keep your enemies close. And I didn't keep them close enough. We had some very fishy handicap action last year. They robbed me.
Everyone needs to get a gin number this year, then.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears, my man. We're working on it. I'm trying to bring these troglodytes out of the dark in golf. You know, they don't take it seriously enough. Anyway, like I need something else to take seriously in my life, right? I come home from golf. My wife goes, and don't worry, we'll get to finance. But we're celebrating Independence Day, so that's going to be a theme for the show. We're going to be a little bit free here, a little bit independent in terms of format this week. But no, I come home from a round of golf. My wife goes, why are you so upset? You were just out there doing something you love. And I was like, well, I didn't play well. She goes, isn't the whole purpose to relax? And I go, honey, you've been married to me now for 14, 13 years. I don't relax about anything that I'm serious about, right? When I was with a client the other day and we were doing a quarterly review, and he looks at me and he goes, Zach, you are the oldest 36-year-old guy I've ever met in my life. He's like, you need to relax. Anyway, but we do have some important stuff to talk about. We've got a list here of things that I want to address. But we're just gonna be a little bit freer. Maybe you're sitting at home going, you're not always. But anyway, market update, we'll get into that. Continue to watch. We got gold. Gold continues to be under pressure. We got a strengthening dollar. And if any of you were out there scratching your heads going, How is it that we run budget deficits like this and $21 trillion of debt and all that kind of stuff, and we've got a strengthening dollar? And I got to tell you, honestly, to me, it looks like it's the beginning of a trend. And ironically, it fits our long-term macroeconomic view of things. As weird as that sounds. And a bit of manna fell out of the sky. Doing some research last night and ran into a video with the CEO and the chief investment officer of Santiago Capital, which is a hedge fund out of San Francisco. And it was really strange. Every once in a while in the world of finance and investing, you have these moments. But I sat there and listened to him lay out his thesis for a 35-minute interview about what he saw going on in the world, what he thought was going to go on in markets. And it was literally word for word sort of the view that I've been working on for the last 2 or 3 years. And it's not confirmation bias. It's not. I'm not excited because he agrees with me. I'm excited because I sit there and go, how can two guys in two different parts of the world look at all these variables and see it exactly the same way? And I'm just dying to speak to him to know what is it that he sees, how he came up with this structure. Because I don't know if you heard the interview last week, but in investing, look, there are rules that we adhere to, right? There are diversification principles. There are general rules that we adhere to. But I've always been a believer that a portion of your portfolio, a diversification strategy, right? A portion of your portfolio should be adaptable to changes you see around you and should be suitable. There should be things you always do and there should be things that are in flux, right? That's true diversification. And if you don't believe me, I know that's not the sermon that's being preached by a lot of other financial advisors, but go look at the biggest institutions. Go look at the richest people, right? There's diversification among managers. There's passive. There's active. There's long hold. There's all these different parts. And like we've said from the very beginning, the reason we talk about risk management constantly and the reason that we get pushback is because what we're trying to do is bring more of an institutional model of investing and asset management into the retail space, because I think it's sorely missing. And if you don't believe me, as we've talked for so long, and I'm going to get off on a tangent here. Here it comes. How much time do we have right now? How long have I been going already on this opening segment? 7 minutes. Okay. You know what? We're letting it fly. So one of the things we wanted to talk about today was financial planning. And we're going to get into that right now. But the myths in investing. And what you've got to remember is a lot of these rules we hold as ironclad, a lot of it is a complex system or a complex portfolio management style, if you will, that's been baked down to a point where the average financial investor can get his hands around it and that the average client can get their hands around it. It's not necessarily, and well, not necessarily, it's not the best way to invest your assets. It's okay. And it's the easiest and simplest for people to understand. You got to understand that there's a sales aspect to it, right? These firms aren't stupid. They want to make it simple so they can sell the most. Now, why don't we do that? You know, sometimes I ask myself why we don't, because we're swimming upstream. But we really believe in what we're doing and we really believe in the mission. And that is to make people, you know, more financially healthy. That is to live better retirements. And as with everything else, it's not simple. And if you don't believe me, and you've got the typical stock bond portfolio, go look at your performance over the last 20 years. It hasn't come anywhere close to the projections. And it won't going forward for structural reasons as well. And this gets us into the financial planning talk. And it's been coming up a lot. And one of the things I hear when I listen to other financial radio shows is I hear a lot of these people leading with plans, leading with retirement income plans. And look, just as a blanket statement before we get into this, we plan, okay? I advocate planning. We just look at it differently. Okay? So, and I listen to these other people, and I'm not denigrating anybody, but what I'm saying is I listen to these other people talking about plans and how you need this and you need, do you know what you need? Do you know what you need? You need a risk-managed portfolio that grows your assets in such a way that you can live off them and grow them, build wealth simultaneously, and remain insulated from shocks that can disturb your retirement. That's what you need. And a plan, quote unquote, is only as good as the input. Now, I'm going to pull back the curtain on this a little bit because I think a lot of people listening to this show know my background. I've worked on all sides of the industry. I've worked at a mutual fund company. I've worked for an investment bank. Those are two opposite sides, right? We got sell side, buy side. I've worked as a financial advisor at multiple firms. And now, obviously, we run our own firm. I'm not just a financial advisor. I'm also, I've been a broker with a Series 7 and a Series 66 license. Now we're obviously a registered investment advisor, but I've looked at it from all sides. And the danger I see in this whole financial planning thing is a lot of misleading information. And to understand what I'm talking about, you have to understand what's behind these financial plans. And we've talked about this a little bit on the show before, but I really wanted to get into it because it's been topical recently. Because our show sounds different. I get it. That was by design. And a lot of these people lead with the financial plans. Do you want to know why they lead with the financial plans? And it's not tawdry, it's not wrong, it's not, but it's a technique. They lead with the financial plans because A, it's a good, sober, responsible way to interact with people and offer them clarity to something that they don't really have their hands around. You're answering a question. You're bringing peace. You're bringing organization to something that looks chaotic, right? There's an appetite for that, and I get that. But why do financial advisors lead with it? They lead with it because it's a great way to round up assets, okay? When I was at Wells Fargo Advisors, we were there right when this big planning push was getting started, and they were launching these retirement planning programs. And they each have their own name, but all these programs are built similarly. They're built on the back of what we call a Monte Carlo simulator that sits there and it judges outcomes. It looks at a portfolio, okay, and has backward-looking 50 to 100-year averages for asset classes like real estate, stocks, bonds, etc. And it sits there and uses the average performance of those asset classes over the last 40, 50, 100 years to project forward performance. All right? And it makes the projections based on that backward-looking information. Let's start off with that right now. So when I first started digging into these programs, I said, well, what are the return assumptions they're going to make? What are the inflation assumptions they're going to make? Right? With stocks, they're going to use the one that you're pretty familiar with, 11%, 12%, some programs. With bonds, they're going to use the historic average over the last 40 years, 6.5%. Right? Big problem right there. Right there. Bonds. Using a projection in general on a bond portfolio, especially a bond fund, and convincing a client that bond fund is going to carry its average performance like it has over the last 40 years, it's a complete fallacy. It's not mathematically possible. So therefore, all the conjecture, all of the information, all of the data, all the stuff that we're looking at when we're defining this retirement plan is garbage. Bonds aren't going to do anywhere close to what they did over the last 40 years. Last 40 years, interest rates were falling. They're at zero now. It's not possible. Stocks are using 11% average. It's not what you've averaged over the last 20 years. Garbage in, garbage out. Now, I know as a sales technique, you'd be better off to, our planning tool. And if you want clarity, It's disingenuous. And I'm not saying the financial advisors that are advocating this planning are disingenuous. I think they believe it. But that's because they've been trained to be asset gatherers. They're not actually managing the money. They're putting you in this fund, that fund, that fund, and telling you to ride it out and collect their fee. And they're doing it because they think it's the best thing to do. But what I'm telling you is that it hasn't worked over the last 10 years. It hasn't worked over the last 20 years. And if you don't think that, if you can recognize that fact, I hate to warn you, but sit back and watch what happens over the next 10 to 20. Now, does that mean we throw everything up in the air and we don't do any planning? No. We do planning, but the planning needs to be around risk management, not outcome planning. Because here's the deal. And, you know, for those of you that want some deeper information in this, or you're financial wonks or nerds like I am, you should check out realvision.com. You got to pay for it, but it's worth it. And it's videos and interviews, but you should listen to these guys that have been doing this for 30, 40 years, putting up some of the best performance numbers on the street, these big fund managers. And one thing I've heard several of them say over and over is something I've been saying for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. And I couldn't agree with it more. And I think it's really honest. Anybody that tells you that they know how this is going to work out, or that you should bet on the, you know, it's the averages are going to carry and planning and all that. Look, we don't know a lot, but what we do know is that average results are the least likely thing to happen, and that nobody really knows how this all is going to play out, because the world's never been here before. Record low interest rates in human history, record piles of debt, record deficits, so on and so on and so on. Every time there's a bump in the market, you got central banks injecting billions of dollars, trillions of dollars of liquidity. Anybody that tells you with any confidence, they know what's going to go on, including me. Now, we have theories, we have things that we're watching, we have things that we're looking at. But to sit there and build a financial plan based off the last 90 years and tell people that they should expect this result, look, that it's just not going to happen. And, you know, if you want to know, you know, if you're wondering what makes me more credible than anybody else out there, fair question. And I would just point to the show. I would just point to the fact that for 2 years we've been sounding the alarm on bonds, and they've been doing exactly what we said they're going to do. We were talking about volatility in November and December. And look, I don't say that to build myself up. If you want a list of things I've gotten wrong, you know, how much time do you have? You know, we're no different than anybody else. But what we do is look at the reality on the ground and we adjust. Right? Finance doesn't reward us for sticking to our guns, right? Finance rewards us for changing when changes need to be made, for pivoting, to being flexible, for thinking outside the box, and most importantly, managing risk. And I just see a lot of bad risk management out there, and a lot of it has to do with these plans and these people that walk out feeling confident because they hit their number, or their advisor tells them, oh, you're in the 90th percentile, or you're in the 85th percentile for fulfilling your retirement plans. The numbers are garbage, guys. Use it to light your fire. Use the paper to light a fire or light fireworks or whatever. It's garbage because the assumptions are wrong. The other thing is if we're looking out over the next 10 to 15 years in this financial plan, what rate of inflation do you want me to calculate? What rate of inflation do you want me to use? Should we use the average rate of inflation over the last 90 years? Probably not wise. Right. If you think we're going to get out of all this money printing and debt and all this kind of stuff without an inflationary shock at some point, I got a bridge to sell you. So what inflation rate should we use? What kind of return should we expect in bonds? Look, I don't know. But what I would be willing to bet that when we look at both bonds and inflation rates as it relates to these financial plans that are being built, I'd bet the house that bonds don't perform as well as the plan is assuming, and that the inflation rate ends up higher than the plan is assuming. Those are the things that I'm most certain in. Stocks, a little more of a wild card. Now, why do we talk about stuff like this? Look, in some ways, it feels like we're bucking the trend. We run a business here, after all, right? So these, like I said, these big banks aren't stupid. They do this stuff and they push their financial plans, and other advisors push their financial plans and blah blah, you know, their income plans and get it all squared away. They push it because they know it sells. So when we don't do things that way, when we do things an alternative way, I'm fully aware of the fact that it probably makes our job harder. We're swimming upstream. But I'm also a big proponent of, first of all, educate yourself, know what you're talking about, and speak the truth, right? That wins out in the end. And you know, don't focus, like my college football coach used to always say, don't worry about the outcomes, focus on the right inputs. And when we're sitting there looking at those financial, I'm not going to run those financial plans. I'm not going to do it. Gives people a false sense of security. I think it incentivizes people to make wrong-headed moves. It incentivizes people to maybe not save as much. You know, I think there's a whole plethora of negative outcomes from using bad data. And not enough people are paying attention to it. So anyway, there's a rant. Market update, right? We're going to do a little bit more of the market update later in the show because I want to talk about some things. A while back, we did a segment called The Anatomy of a Collapse. We were talking about Tesla. It's a fun conversation. I want to revisit that. Again, no recommendations to buy or sell, but I just think it's something interesting to keep an eye on. We're also going to talk a little bit more about this theory that the CIO, the Chief Investment Officer at Santiago Capital down in San Francisco, laid out. And I didn't tell you. So we connect with him. He's going to be on the show, not next week, but the week after that. And he and I are going to have a discussion about this because I'm going to try to make it not as wonkish and not as detailed so you guys really get something out of it. I realize this isn't what you guys do for a living, and I hate talking in an esoteric fashion or you know, in an inside baseball manner, just trying to, you know, I think a lot of people do that just to make themselves look smart. I've always thought one of the greatest examples of intelligence was being able to take really complex things and making them edible, making them consumable for people that aren't insiders, right? And I think so many of these other experts just love to hear themselves pontificate and sound smart and use big words, and I just don't find that as useful. So we're going to try to break it down. It's dense stuff, but it's fascinating. It's why I love the job. It's why I get up, you know, well, it's not why I get up in the morning, but but it makes it exciting. So I just want to share with you. And so he's going to be on the show with us. My name's Brent. I'm forgetting his last name, but Brent from Santiago Capital is going to be on with us. So anyway, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back, and hope you're enjoying your weekend. I am. I'm probably in the midst of the back nine on the final round of the cup right now as this show is airing. So wish me well, folks. Hopefully I bring some hardware home this year. Anyway, we'll be right back. Thanks for listening. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Dory Monson. I'm here with Brian Ott, host of Long Term Care Radio right here on Cairo every Saturday at 7. And Brian, before signing up for a plan, I attended one of your classes with my wife, learned how passionate you are about what you do and how you love to teach people about the importance of long term care planning.
You know, I really do love educating people, Dory.
You know, why is that?
Well, someone took the time to educate my grandmother about long-term care, which meant she got the level of care she deserved, but it also meant my mom didn't have to give up her life to be a caregiver. You know, Dory, it taught me firsthand that long-term care planning protects you and the people you care about most.
Yeah, that's exactly why my wife and I put a plan in place with Brian and why I recommend you do the same. Start by joining Brian at his next long-term care planning class and learn about the most innovative plans available, like the one I got. It's going to pay me back whether I use it or not. Don't miss Brian's next class. It's Thursday, July 19th at 7 p.m. in Bellevue. There are only a few seats left, so sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs, so why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back to continue the most scintillating hour of financial news. I think that's funny. I don't know why. Hey, you know, one of the cool things about doing this is, number one, getting to meet so many of the listeners, and then also having a platform to share your ideas. It's really cool, and it's something that I feel really blessed to be able to do. And so many cool things have come out of it. But one of them takes the cake. The other day, Todd Herman, you guys all know Todd Herman. He's become a friend of mine, and work out with him, and he drives me into the ground. Man, he whooped me. And I got to know Todd a little bit. He was very helpful and attended a fundraiser we did for New Horizons, which, for those of you that don't know, as conservatives, which I know a lot of you are, I've always felt that it was really important that, you know, that you put your money where your mouth is in terms of, you know, the conservatives out there get painted as people that don't care and they just care about money and, you know, they don't care about the little man. And hey, we all know that that's the furthest thing from the truth. We just believe that there are much more efficient ways to help people than government, right? And I think nothing embodies that like New Horizons, which is an outreach program for Seattle homeless youth. Anyway, go to New Horizons. I think it's newhorizons.com, or just Google New Horizons Homeless in Seattle. If you want to help to a non-government sponsored private entity that incentivizes growth and employment, basically to be in their program and to live full time as a homeless youth at New Horizons, you've got to work. You've got to work at one of the coffee shops. And when we've been up there, we've met graduates, several graduates of the program who've gone on to lead awesome lives that are doing things in the world. And it's just a great way to help people out. So anyway, I got to know Todd through that because he was all too helpful in jumping in there and put his money where his mouth is and help out. And so the other day he was filling in for Rush, and I got to be a fly on the wall. I walk out there and it was just, we got done recording our segment just as Todd was done doing the Rush Limbaugh show. And Mr. Snerdley, Bo Snerdley, Rush's longtime producer, was here, flew out in Seattle to do the show. And I got to sit there and be a fly on the wall and get caught between a chat between Todd and Bo and another gentleman that was there. I'm forgetting his name. And then it was just fascinating. I sat there and went, what am I sitting here doing talking to Bo Snerdley? What a cool thing. Anyway, I just thought that was, you know, I grew up listening to that program and listening to Rush talk to Mr. Snerdley. It was kind of an odd moment. So anyway, getting on to the rest of it. So I think we'll finish kind of going through the market update here and wanted to talk about Tesla a little bit. So we'll address the market update stuff right now. But before we get into that though, man, what a crazy world we're living in. Right, we got socialists winning elections. We got people saying, I saw signs the other day that said, abolish ICE, abolish profits. Anyway, that's just a side note, random thought, but wow. And the thing that, that blows me away about that is I remember I was like an Alex P. Keaton growing up. I was far less libertarian than I am now. And I was very idealistic. And I remember sitting there saying that I thought a lot of these people in the political opposition were socialists disguised as Democrats. No, no, we're not. And the pushback. And you guys remember that, right? It just amazes me that we're so far down the path that they're like, yeah, that's right. We are socialists. Just, it was one of those moments the other day, it hit me and I went, wait a second. We're not even arguing that anymore. We're unabashedly sitting there saying, yeah, we're socialists. We think that's the answer. And putting politics aside, I think it's a really scary thing. I mean, everybody talks about fascism, which don't get me wrong, right? Last name Abraham. I have a dog in that fight. yeah, I mean, you know, fascism scares the heck out of me. And it did some serious damage. But when you want to compare it to socialism and the impact that socialism slash communism had, I mean, it's not even close. And maybe I'm getting a little conspiratorial here and we're getting off the finance page, and I get that. But you ever sit around and wonder why we've got so many movies and so many documentaries on Hitler and Goering and Auschwitz and all this other, and almost nothing about what the communist socialist side of it was doing at the same time? I mean, you got level-headed estimates, you know, of communism being responsible for, you know, 100, 125 million deaths in the 20th century. And we're worried about fascism? I mean, don't get me wrong, I think we should be, but I just think it's interesting that the extreme right of the scenario, right, or so-called the extreme right, I think everybody also conveniently leaves out the fact that Hitler was the head of the Socialist Party. I'm forgetting the exact name of it, but it was something about the German Socialist Movement or something like that. And so was Mussolini. They leave that out conveniently, but they want to, it's the atrocities of fascism. And you go, whoa. Right? If you're a bad guy and you're in a bad guy competition in the 20th century, Hitler came in at like fourth or fifth. Pol Pot, Mao Zedong, Joseph Stalin. I mean, he wasn't even in their league. But we ignore that. Right? We don't talk about that. You know, who's the greatest villain of the 20th century? It's Hitler. And like I said, really bad guy. Like, no one's arguing that. But if we're comparing apples to apples here, Hitler was trying to get in those guys' weight class, right? I mean, he didn't hold a candle. Anyway, just, it's fascinating to me how truth just flies out the window and everybody's blindly stumbling around. Oh, let's try socialism now. Yeah, that's worked out great. That's been phenomenal. Sweet mercy. Anyway, all right, so get back into what else is going on in the show. Look, I told you, this is an Independence Day broadcast. I'm going to act independently, and we're going to, a little bit of stream of conscience here. Keep an eye on those rates, guys. They're moving higher. They're not going to go lower. A lot of fascinating moves in the market right now. What you're starting to see, and one of the biggest reasons behind the dollar rally, is you've got some real shakiness showing up in emerging markets. You've got Chinese stock markets not behaving well. And one of the things that you've got to understand, right or wrong, the dollar is still the reserve currency of the world. And any time we get wheels wobbling or shakiness in the financial system, what do people want, right? They want liquidity. They want optionality. And so that reach for cash or the U.S. dollar, that becomes the thing. And so rather than the dollar reflecting, solvency or reflecting confidence in the American system, the dollar is needed for liquidity, right? And so when you see different parts in the world starting to shake, which we're seeing certainly in Europe in places, we're seeing some economic distress in the UK, we're seeing it in emerging markets. You know, some of it, the media is going to all try to play it up like, It's all trade war scares. Yeah, there's an aspect of that, but I really don't think that that's what's driving things at all. The media would like to because they want to lay it at the feet of Trump. But we're 9 years into a market that's gone straight up, right? I mean, excesses build up and things begin to teeter. And it's, you know, we've all seen this our whole lives, right? Nothing goes forever. And that's sort of the baseline for what me and Brent from Santiago Capital are going to talk about in a week and a half. Is, ironically, I think a strengthening dollar is going to be a bigger problem. And I don't want to tease too much of it because I want to really have this conversation with Brent. The other side of it is it's a very lengthy conversation. And just because the dollar is strengthening does not mean that I don't think there won't be massive inflation. And it's a weird thing to say, weird thing to even say out loud. But there's reasons behind it, and I think those reasons are accurate. So again, I've said too much. It's a reason to join in and tune in and listen in a week and a half from now when we talk to Brent about it. Other things going on in the market. The Tesla thing is really interesting to me. It's become somewhat of a hobby. And I'll tell you why. We talked about an anatomy of collapse a few weeks back, or maybe it was a month back. But, and to be fair, let me just, and I've said this on the show before, I love the cars. But if you really want to get into finance and you really want to look at it, the catastrophes to me are almost more interesting than the success stories. Don't get me wrong. I'd rather be aligned with the success stories. But I think it's just good drama. It's good theater. If you go look at Tesla, the cars are incredible. Met with a listener actually this week who had a Tesla Model S, loved it. Beautiful car. Amazing the technology. All that kind of stuff. It's all great, right? Well, the assumptions that have been made about Tesla are really over the top. The fact that Tesla's got a bigger market cap than GM and it's burning billions of dollars every year. The fact that it's got a lot of debt on the balance sheet. The fact that it's, in the true sense, it's not even close to being able to produce a profit. There's so much hype and there's so much hope built into the price of the stock. And there's a lot of questionable activities going on with management. Don't mean to offend any Tesla fans out there, but you got to separate your admiration of the product from the underlying health of the company. And I think it's a real exercise in critical thinking, being able to look at it with clear eyes and set the whole deification of Musk aside and look at it for what it is. And they hit their magic 5,000 Model 3 per week mark. They announced that yesterday, I want to say. And the stock has dropped, I want to say, $50 from the high. And everybody goes, so it's bad news that they reached their production goals? No, I don't think it's bad news, but when you've got a stock like that where you've got so much hope and hype built into it, that a lot of times reaching these milestones, momentum investors sit there and go, okay, there's the good news has been realized. We've run this thing as far as it goes. Now the risks really outweigh the rewards, especially when you're looking at a stock that is that detached from its underlying value. And again, this is not an indictment. If you're a Tesla fan, I'm agnostic. I admire the heck out of the automobile. I admire the heck out of what they're doing. Because they're innovators. And I think the cars are incredible. Not a big fan of the Model 3 because I think it's cheesy and it looks like a Hyundai. But no offense to anybody out there again. I think it's not a lot of car for what you're paying for it. But the other thing is that Elon Musk, the CEO, he is infatuated with short sellers. He talks about it all the time. Engineering is short squeeze. Saw a really cool piece of research that was done by an analyst. It was a week and a half ago. Elon Musk bought 25 million shares of Tesla. But there was some in-depth analysis, and you can't say for sure, but it really appeared as though that purchase was made in the pre-market, so before the stock market opened. Now, the question, the problem behind that is, why would you buy in the pre-market? The pre-market is far less liquid than the regular trading market, so you're not going to be able to execute at the ideal prices. But therein lies the interesting thing, right? If you're putting a $25 million order in and you really want it to jack up the price of the stock,
you'd want to put that buy order in a period of time where there was less liquidity because it would make a bigger impact. It'd be irrational to do that, or it would be irrational to do it otherwise. If you were trying to buy the stock as an investment, you'd want to do it in the regular market because there's more liquidity and you could get more stock at a cheaper price. There's more shares available, right? There's more people, right? The regular market's open. And why would you be so concerned about one of the early warning signs I ever looked at? If you hear a CEO obsessed with short sellers and fixated on the stock price, you know two things. One of two has to be true. A, remember as we were talking about earlier, called my college football coach, focus on the inputs, not the outputs. If you see a CEO focus singularly on the stock price, you know he's not focused on the underlying business enough. He's just not. You can't serve two masters. Right. The other side of it is any guy that's obsessed about the short sellers, if you're on the side of truth, why would you waste any time worried about short sellers? They're going to get burned eventually anyway. And I don't know what it is, but it's a hallmark of bad things. Almost every time, you know, you think about one of the most famous circumstances of a CEO or a high-ranking executive being obsessed about short sellers. Look at Jeff Skilling and Enron. And there's a lot of parallels between things that Jeff Skilling has said in conference calls and to analysts that ring eerily close to things that Musk has said. A lot of alarm bells there. And it looks to me like the jig is up or close to it. The other thing you look at is the departure of high-ranking executives. Now, a lot of people say, oh, that's not true. Well, listen, when you look at a company like Tesla, and I've heard people come out and say, look, the high-ranking executives leaving isn't out of line with the normal executive turnover at normal companies, okay? And there's some truth to that. Here's the difference. We can't compare high-ranking executives leaving Tesla to high-ranking executives leaving Coke, right? The reason high-ranking executives leave a company like Coca-Cola is because they get a better offer, a better opportunity, they retire, right? When a high-ranking executive leaves somewhere like Tesla, you want to pay more attention to that because Tesla has cash flow problems. The vast majority of their officers and high-up executives are going to be heavily laden in stock options. And a good portion of which, depending on their employment contract, evaporate the minute they leave. So if they thought that this thing was going to the moon, you just don't see that. You don't see it in the early days of Microsoft. You don't see it in the early days of Amazon. Everybody's pulling in the same direction, and they know they're sitting on a winning lottery ticket. Well, if Tesla's right on the brink of this great breakout, right, and they're ready to cash it in, you wouldn't see these people walking away. And again, we don't know for sure. That's why we don't have positions on it. I'm not advising anybody to have positions on it. I just think it's a really good opportunity to educate yourself and look at one of these things up close, because I could be 100% wrong. And if I am, I think it would be a good lesson, because you'll watch these guys pull off something that I didn't think was possible without severe turbulence. But if I'm right, I think it'll make you a better investor down the road, because you kind of know what some of those telltale signs are to look for. You know, rats leaving the ship. CEOs obsessed about short sellers. It doesn't look good. And then the price action of their stock since they made that announcement of hitting 5,000 Model 3s. No bueno. Not looking too hot. So anyway, again, not a recommendation. Maybe you've got a small percentage of Tesla and you're holding it for a lottery ticket. Not advising you to get rid of it. I think these things are fascinating. I hate seeing people lose money, but I think it also makes us better investors. It makes us more critical. And that was one of the things that I struggled with Tesla, because I was sitting there going, look, I really admire the car. The guy reminds me of Tucker. Remember Tucker that made the famous Tucker cars and was basically boxed out? I think this happened in the 50s. Made a car that was technologically way beyond. They even had turning headlights back then, like they do now. He was 50, 60, 70 years ahead of his times. and he got boxed out. And there's an aspect of Elon Musk that reminds me of Tucker. The innovation, the brilliance, the car itself, I mean, especially the Model S, it's phenomenal. But you really have to learn to separate admiration about certain things and innovation, and you really got to keep your eyes on the ball, which is the balance sheet and the cash flow and all these kind of things to avoid being had. We do not invest on hope. You do that and you're going to end up in a hopeless situation. We invest on facts. Anyway, got to run, went a little bit over, but we'll be right back. Going to talk about the, want to talk a little bit more about that strong dollar aspect and what we're going to be talking about with the CIO of the Santiago Fund down there in San Francisco. So we'll discuss that a little bit more and then some other randoms that we'll hit up on. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Hope you're enjoying your weekend. Lord knows I am. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you for sticking with us. Thanks for just joining us, if you just joined us. And this is the Independence Day special, so I am executing my independence as a host by doing a little more hopping around than we typically do. I kind of had the random grab bag of stuff that I wanted to talk about that I thought would be fun and interesting. Hopefully it is. But a clarification. So one of the things that we talked about, and we're going to talk with Brent from Santiago Fund down there in San Francisco in a week and a half, hedge fund manager down there, and he and I share a remarkably similar outlook, and I'm not doing that. I don't go out and find people that agree with me. Usually I have kind of a non-mainstream way of looking at it. I mean, you know, take for instance the fact that we advocate those fixed indexed annuities as opposed to bonds. I remember when we came to that realization. Funny enough, it actually happened on a golf course. I still remember it, 2012. And I remembered thinking, you know, I cannot believe that we're going to start advocating and selling these products because I've preached against insurance products and fixed indexed annuities my whole life, but it just seems to make sense. Looking back, the clients that we've put in those products over the last 5 years as a bond replacement, as part of their portfolio that would fill in with bonds or most of bonds or part of their bonds, it's done phenomenal. I think on average, they're up somewhere between 8 to 9%. A year average. There's some that are, it varies. I mean, I'm not giving performance data, but it's been pretty incredible. And a lot of our clients have made enough in these products over the last 4 or 5 years since we started using them as a bond replacement to where they could make no more than they have already. And over the next 10 years, they'll still outperform bonds because rates are so low. So we look at things a little bit differently. The other thing I remember about coming to that realization was this is going to be like running uphill. This is going to be, you know, swimming upstream because it flies in the face of a lot of what we hear. And we still get that, right? Even though it's out underperformed or overperformed and blown away bonds and been way better and safer and all, lowered the cost of portfolios and all that kind of stuff, we still get kickback. So we usually have a variant perception or a different way in which we look at things. But what fascinated about me is me about that interview with Brent, the chief investment officer of the Santiago Fund down there in San Francisco, and I keep saying that over and over so you guys know who I'm talking about, was you've got two guys that live in completely different areas of the world, have different businesses, do different things, and we looked at all the different variables and we saw the exact same thing and came to the same conclusion. So now I know he came to it differently than I did, but that's what intrigues me. Right, we were looking at it through different lenses, and the outcome or what we saw the outlook being was exactly the same. And again, I'm not looking for people that reinforce our views. What I am looking for, though, is you know, if I want to know how he came to it. I want to know his formula. I want to know, you know, hopefully maybe it'll make my thesis stronger or weaker. It helps you refine the way that you're looking at things. And so as you can tell, I'm pretty excited about it. And the big argument is that we're going to have some things happen that I think a lot of people don't expect, and even things that people don't think are possible. For instance, I'm a big believer in gold. Not for a lot of your portfolio, but as an insurance policy. I think in a period of time where you see central banks printing money like it's going out of style and record debts and all that kind of stuff, I think it's prudent to have a little bit in gold. It is the oldest currency on the face of the earth, and it's the only one that's never defaulted, right? I mean, there's some value there. And I think eventually all this leads to a restructuring of the currency situation in the world. That's another really long conversation. But when you've got one reserve currency in the world, and it happens to be a fiat currency, and all the other currencies are fiat currencies, that in a weird way, it's like linking all the currencies. The differentials between the currencies really become mute because, you know, higher interest rates typically mean a shorter supply of currency. And yet those two things have been divorced because you've got central bankers printing, right? They've provided infinite liquidity to the world. And so you got one reserve currency around the world that also happens to be considered the safest. And in a weird way, and I'm trying to take a really complex thing and boil it down, but in a weird way, when you look at the debts in the world and how they've grown exponentially, there's not enough dollars to go around to back up all of those obligations, especially U.S. dollar denominated ones. So there'll be, and if you want an example of this, go look at 08-09. Right, the value of the dollar, the value of U.S. Treasury bills shot through the roof. It's one of the reasons that we actually made money through 08-09. We were just sitting in U.S. Treasuries, and those Treasuries went up 10, 12, 13%. So now at the same time, now if we say rising dollar, we'd think falling commodity prices. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's going to be the exact opposite. I think you're going to see a rising dollar and rising gold at the exact same time. People go, oh, that can't happen. Well, I think it will. And I don't want to get too far off the beaten path and start talking about that, but just trying to whet your appetite a little bit because, man, I'm just excited to have this conversation with Brent. Because it's a crazy world out there, especially the financial world. We've been talking about that for, you know, 2 years on the radio. It's the Wild West. One other thing I wanted to get to, and I've had some comments about this. Last week on the show, we interviewed Mark Yusko. He talked about Bitcoin. I want to be very clear about something. I am not advocating Bitcoin. Those are Mark Yusko's thoughts. I am not telling you not to own Bitcoin. I had Mark on because Mark is an incredibly astute investor. And there are very, very, very smart people with very good track records out there that are saying, hey, don't just laugh at this cryptocurrency thing. And there are reasons behind it. I'm not taking a position. As a fiduciary, I do not think that it's responsible. And I don't think it's necessary, but don't summarily dismiss it. You know, I think Mark brought up a great point. Paul Krugman, right? He was quoted, I think it was the late 90s, as saying the internet's not that big a deal. It's going to end up being just as impactful on society as fax machines. Well, yeah, you swung and missed it that one, sir. And so I just, you know, is there any real value backing Bitcoin? Not really. The technology, I think, has some value. Is there any? But you can say that about other currencies, right? We're not talking about a dollar that's backed by U.S. gold. We're not talking about a euro that's backed by hard assets. And again, I'm not arguing for it. I'm just saying keep an open mind. You know, keep an open mind, because I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked to see at some point. Here's what I know. At some point, the populace around the world is going to be tired of not getting paid any interest on their money. They're going to be tired of their money being degraded in value constantly through the printing of money and through inflation. And they're going to want something else. I think gold is naturally an obvious place for people to turn, but it very well could incorporate a cryptocurrency play. Like I said, we're not buying them for our clients. I don't think it's prudent at this point. Maybe some point that'll change. But I just want to make sure that I wasn't advocating one way or the other. Okay. It looks volatile. I can't tell you where it's going to go. I don't fully understand it. I mean, I understand it, but I caution both ways. If you want to throw 0.5%, 1%, 1.5% of your portfolio at it, you know, it's probably not going to kill you. But just want to be sure that we spoke about that. But seeing a little rally, the other thing too, seeing a little rally here in gold, which is interesting. Dollar was off today on the DXY, about 0.25%, and gold was up 1%. That's a little bit of an atypical move. But I think that you're going to start seeing that. You're going to see a point in the not too distant future where we see the dollar and gold rallying at the same time. I think that's the end game. And I cannot wait to discuss this with Brent. It's going to be a fascinating conversation. Hopefully you guys will find it fascinating. So, I realize we haven't even said, if you want a consultation, if you want to know, if you want to email us, maybe you want to do it over email, maybe you don't want to talk on the phone. How are we getting greater returns for our clients, shielding them from the inevitable interest rate risk, increasing returns, lowering risk, lowering cost? Guys, get a second opinion, right? I think the value that we're bringing to the table is tremendous. The amount of safety that we're providing clients, greater returns, lower cost. We're not just talking about it. We're not just blowing smoke. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can go to the website, knowyourriskradio.com, listen to the other iTunes, our iTunes page, listen to other interviews, get our Common Sense booklet, educate yourselves. I think there's easy things you can do. I know. There are easy things we can do to lower your risk, lower your cost, and increase your returns. And you're going to need to do it. We're entering very odd times. We're entering unforeseen, you know, uncharted territory. Don't just blow it off. Give us a call. Anyway, I hope you guys have a wonderful 4th of July weekend. I hope you had a safe and fun 4th. And hopefully I'm winning the cup as we speak. So anyway, thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you again soon. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.